stay tuned for the Giuliana Fulano Show.
Welcome to the Giuliana Forlano Show. I'm Giuliana Forlano. Tonight, joining us on the program, Jonathan R. Latham. He's a co-founder and executive director of the Bioscience Resource Project, which is the nonprofit publisher of independent science news. He's a former genetic engineer, but the good kind, and a biologist. He has published scientific papers in tons of disciplines, and we are going to talk about whatever happened to President Obama's promise to restore scientific integrity. So we're talking about science, but first, a couple of jokes. We need to do some jokes. Stay tuned.
It's time for jokes.
Fool me once.
Headline and jokes.
Shame on you.
Jokes and headline.
Fool me, we can't get fooled again.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
That's right. It is time for some jokes. Billy Joel announced that he's expecting his second child with his current girlfriend. It'll be the first piece of original material he's released in 20 years. A Missouri senator is looking to have steaks and seafood be removed from food stamp use and go back to where they belong as clothing items for Lady Gaga. The Civil War officially ended 150 years ago this week in the United States and will hopefully be ending soon in Mississippi, Georgia, Missouri, Florida, South Carolina, Alabama. The Rolling Stones are going back on tour. It's unbelievable. Most people their age can only dream about being appointed to the Supreme Court. In the wake of the religious discrimination law passed in Indiana last month, George Takei has proposed a boycott of the state. That brings the amount of people voluntarily visiting Indiana from zero to zero. Obamacare turned 5 years old last week, making it more mature than most of its opponents. Presidential hopeful Ted Cruz even signed up for it. Fortunately for him, his delusions of grandeur are covered as a pre-existing condition. According to a new public policy poll, Ted Cruz's support among Republican voters rose to 16%. Or to put it another way, among Republican voters, Cruz has 16% more support than climate change. Paula Deen is finally making her return to TV after 2 years. And, of course, she'll be sponsored by KKK Mart. Ah ha ha. You gotta love a little KKK Mart show. Excellent. By the way, I don't care if Billy Joel hasn't put out anything new. I went to see him play. He's playing once a month in Madison Square Garden, and I was lucky enough to get to go. And it was awesome. It was super awesome. The whole place was filled with Billy Joel fans, which basically was like a lot of working class folks of a certain age. And we had a heck of a time. He put on an amazing show. So if you're listening, Billy, because I know you're a New York person, it was just a joke. We love you. Now, I don't know if you guys are paying attention. Probably you are, because you're an amazing audience for the Giuliana Forlano Show. But guess what else is happening on Wednesday? It is Earth Day. Earth Day happens this Wednesday. Not sure what you're going to do to celebrate. Not sure if I think the best celebration for Earth Day is to, like, you know, go do something active, because we need people to be active in terms of conservation. But President Obama put out a statement in his weekly YouTube address to the youth of America, which I guess is us. If you can get YouTube, you're a youth. And this is what he said. He said, "Is climate change very important? Let's talk about that. Let's listen to what our leader has said."
Hi, everybody. Wednesday is Earth Day, a day to appreciate and protect this precious planet we call home. And today, there is no greater threat to our planet than climate change. 2014 was the planet's warmest year on record. 14 of the 15 hottest years on record have all fallen in the first 15 years of this century. This winter was cold in parts of our country, as some folks in Congress like to point out, but around the world, it was the warmest ever recorded. And the fact that the climate is changing has very serious implications for the way we live now. Stronger storms, deeper droughts.
Yeah, we know, Barack.
Longer wildfire seasons.
Right.
The world's top climate scientists are warning us that a changing climate already affects the air our kids breathe. Last week, the Surgeon General and I spoke with public experts about how climate change is already affecting patients across the country.
And
worse.
The
Pentagon says that climate change poses immediate risks to our national security.
Yeah.
And on Earth Day, I'm going to visit the Florida Everglades to talk about the way that climate change threatens our economy. The Everglades is one of the most special places in our country, but it's also one of the most fragile. Rising sea levels are putting a national treasure and an economic engine for the South Florida tourism industry at risk. So climate change can no longer be denied or ignored. The world is looking to the United States, to us, to lead. And that's what we're doing. We're using more clean energy than ever before. America's number one in wind power, and every 3 weeks we bring online as much solar power as we did in all of 2008. We're taking steps to waste less energy with more fuel-efficient cars that save us money at the pump and more energy-efficient buildings that save us money on our electricity bills. So thanks in part to these actions, our carbon pollution has fallen by 10% since 2007.
Not enough.
Even as we've grown our economy and seen the longest streak of private sector job growth on record. We've committed to doubling the pace at which we cut carbon pollution, and China's committed for the first time to limiting their emissions. And because the world's two largest economies came together, there's new hope that with American leadership this year, the world will finally reach an agreement to prevent the worst impacts of climate change before it's too late. This is an issue that's bigger and longer lasting than my presidency.
Yeah.
It's about protecting our God-given natural wonders.
I thought he was going to say
good jobs that rely on them.
Damn national.
It's about shielding our cities and our families from disaster and harm. It's about keeping our kids healthy and safe. This is the only planet we've got. And years from now, I want to be able to look our children and grandchildren in the eye and tell them that we did everything we could to protect it. Thanks, everybody, and have a great weekend.
That was President Obama, in case you couldn't figure that out by the obvious voice, talking about how climate change is real and we have to do something about it. And he is a smart man because he is connecting that message to the media cycle, Earth Day. Joining us via Skype, we are very lucky to have, as I said in the intro, Jonathan Latham, co-founder and executive director of the Bioscience Resource Project, which is the nonprofit publisher of independent science news, meaning independent from like corporate influence, etc. He is a former genetic engineer and biologist, publishing tons of scientific papers and things as diverse as plant ecology, virology, genetics. We're very happy to have you on the show, Jonathan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Juliana.
Hi. Were you able to hear President Obama's message to the nation about how important climate change is and how it's a threat to national security, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. I was, yeah. Thank you.
What did you think about that?
Well, it's all true, right? But the president hasn't done too much about it, you know, and he's set, for example, through the EPA, he has set a target. I think it's 30% reduction by, I think the timeline was 2030, but actually 15% of that, the half of that increase has actually already been done. So, or decrease in the possibility of let's see. 50% of what his target was has already been achieved because the economy crashed in 2007.
Oh, so this wasn't because anyone did anything.
That's basically correct. Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to just try to keep your microphone a little bit farther away from your face because we can hear your breathing and it's distracting us from science and making us think of other things.
is that any better?
That's much better. Yes, thank you very much. So it's really great to have you here, and for folks who aren't familiar with Independent Science News, let's start with that. Can you tell folks a little bit about Independent Science News? Why do we need something called Independent Science News, first of all?
Well, because the science media essentially is doing the beck and call of governments and corporations.
Mm.
So a huge amount of what you read in the science media, which is important because it trickles down to the New York Times and then to the newspaper stations or to all the rest of the media and becomes public knowledge. That information is basically is beholden to massive corporations and to the government.
I thought it was really interesting on the website, which is independentsciencenews.org, the fact that people kind of don't see through what is PR and what is not. Could you talk a little bit about the example of the genetic determinist understanding of society and human nature versus, you know, what possibly the real components of illness, et cetera, are?
That is a super interesting question. So basically, you have a theory of human nature and human illness and what makes us what we are that has to do with genetics, which has been pushed by companies, by governments, by a lot of geneticists. And essentially, what's happened is it's been disproven by the evidence that they have collected. Now, it was always a long shot, right? But we sequence a human genome and the White House made huge announcements about the usefulness of the human genome, etc., which for strictly medical research, it has been useful.
Mm.
But it was also going to explain why we were sick. But the problem is that, firstly, they haven't come up with the evidence to actually demonstrate that. And also, many people knew that it was always likely to be largely or even wholly untrue.
Mm.
And so basically, because most people cannot, you know, don't know genetics enough and don't know maths enough to know that this is all based on dubious experiments, that they have basically, it's been possible to bamboozle the entire population into thinking that, you know, the heart disease you have, the diabetes you have, the Alzheimer's, the Parkinson's disease, that these things originate in genetic causes when, of course, they're new diseases. Right, but that's
yeah.
So
no
that
one. How come
out.
No one thinks about that? Like that heart disease wasn't like so enormous, you know, even 100 years ago, or maybe.
Well, I mean, every so often somebody brings it up, and then you know it gets kind of poo-pooed, and you know, well, let's talk about something else.
Well, they always bring up this idea. They
bring
up this idea that well, we didn't have studies back then of why people mm-hmm. died, but I'm pretty sure there were death certificates all the way back to there were like records of why people died.
In some cases, there were. I mean, the fact that you have diseases with new names like Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease means that they were spotted by doctors, you know, 50 or 100 years ago as basically new illnesses.
Mm. Mm. And this is used by corporations to basically say that, well, I guess if it's genetic and we're focusing on finding genetic answers, then we don't have to worry about, you know, the things that are in our food and what Monsanto is spreading on our crop fields, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yes. But also the government, you know, doesn't feel that it's policy responsibility to do anything about junk food or about smoking or about whatever, you know, whatever that particular illness is or pesticides in your food. They realized quite early on that this worked really, really well for them as a way of convincing the population not to worry about all their polluting activities and, you know, all the things, the stresses that people are now put under. You know, we're asked not to worry about them in the name of genetics.
Just scrolling through the articles that are on the website, the titles make me want to sit with this website all day. Food, farming, and climate change, it's bigger than everything else. What the WTO-FAO Alliance on Food portends. 30,000 doctors in Argentina and health professionals demand a ban on glyphosate? Am I missing?
Glyphosate.
Okay. So I'm going to keep you on the phone for the next 2 hours talking about these things, if you don't mind. But one of the things that really stands out is the environmental burden of disease. What does it take to make people pay attention to the environment and health? This is a piece by Tracy Wood. It's over at the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism in addition to on Independent Science News. Are you familiar with that piece?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. So, did she come up with anything? Like, what does it take to get people to, a general population to pay attention to the environment and to health?
Well, their particular idea was that to try to cost it, right, in billions of dollars, right, to work out what proportion of the disease burden is being caused by environmental factors, and then work out that that costs hundreds of billions of dollars every single year to in this case, to the European Union. You know, and the idea that, well, we haven't told people it's, you know, telling people that it's killing them doesn't seem to make any difference. So we need to explain to policymakers that this is making people sick. And in countries with socialized medicine, inverted commas, that costs the government money.
Right.
In the U.S., that doesn't cost the government any money at all. Right. And this is for Medicare or such like.
That's interesting. I think we could get a lot of right-wingers on board by saying these poisons and toxins are making poor people and brown people sick, and then you're going to have to pay for it. And I'm sure they would get all up in arms for having to pay for someone else's health care, especially someone they consider an other. This is a great idea. I say we run with it in order to make, you know, positive policies that can address these things.
I mean, the downside of your suggestion is that a lot of companies are making a lot of money in healthcare.
Right.
If people died of old age, which is what they should do, then no medical treatment can make any difference to you, right? If you should just die naturally, age 100 or so, from old age. But what happens to most people is they get sick because of the food they eat or the environmental toxins that they're exposed to in the workplace or in agriculture or in their environment. They live near a nuclear power station or something. These things create illnesses that are major, major problems, but also can be treated by modern medicine, because at least in principle, they're not old age, right? You cannot treat old age, but you can treat all these other things, but you can make money from them.
Isn't the call to treating genetic disease, quote unquote, genetic diseases, a call to basically treat old age on some level?
Well, there aren't genetic diseases, pretty much. I mean, there are some mutations that exist in the population that may be like Huntington's disease, for example. It's a very rare mutation that you could potentially treat even by a genetic method. But those kinds of illnesses are really, really rare.
But what about cancer? You know, I heard cancer has a very strong genetic component to it.
Well, there's two meanings to that word genetic. In the case of cancer, right, it's a mutation. But it arises, it's not necessarily your birth mutation. Mm. It's a mutation that arises inside your lung or your brain or your liver or whatever it is. So in that sense, it is a genetic disease. But in the sense that you inherited a predisposition to cancer, then it's not a genetic disease. So in the case of cancer, there's some complications in that. But the chances that you get cancer because of something you were born with rather than something you acquired, for example, environmental toxin or a pesticide or something that entered your body. There's almost everybody who gets cancer. It's because of something that entered their body after they were born.
Can you talk about the glyphosate that Argentinian doctors are demanding a ban from?
Yes. I mean, they have, basically, their country's being sprayed with glyphosate, right?
What is that?
Monsanto calls it Roundup.
But oh,
it's a pesticide, but it's the active ingredient in Roundup.
Yeah.
And Argentina has gone big into GMO soybeans. And as a consequence, they have weeds that are resistant now to Roundup. So the soybeans are resistant to Roundup. They've been spraying tons and tons of Roundup and increasingly more and more Roundup. And the population is becoming sick who live in the countryside. So there's basically two things that have happened in Argentina. One is tons of people have moved to the cities because there's no agricultural livelihoods for them anymore. They're not ranching. They're not growing their small crops and whatever. But the other half of the population that has stayed in the countryside is becoming sick from so much spraying of Roundup. And so these doctors are upset about this, and rightly so.
Oy. And do you think that will they have any success? I mean, Monsanto is like the worst. They have another article that's linked to from independentsciencenews.org, your place, says that Monsanto knew of this cancer link from the thing in Roundup 35 years ago.
The EPA also knew about it. And there were studies going way back which basically showed, you know, there were elevated cases of cancer in the animals that they gave to Roundup, the mice. But what they essentially did was write them off as happenstance, or, you know, they made various excuses, which, you know, there's so much latitude in these experiments that people do when they want to have their pesticides approved. The Monsanto made an argument and EPA accepted it, and that essentially becomes the end of the matter.
Well, I also read on your website that Monsanto has a discredit bureau. What mm-hmm. is, can you tell, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I was just like, your website is wonderful and it makes my jaw drop. I mean, I know about them, but mm-hmm. I don't know, I know they're evil. I'm just not sure if I really have looked into the specifics. Could you tell our mm-hmm. audience what Monsanto's discredit bureau does?
Well, essentially what they run, an operation in which they essentially, scientific results come up in some way that the company doesn't like, they want to do something about that, right? And there's a whole number of things that you can do to win the war over science. So, for instance, you can discredit the journal that research came from. You can discredit the authors. You can discredit the experiments. You can do all sorts of, you can throw all kinds of sand in the air to try to confuse the issue of whether your chemical or product is causing harm. Mm. And so, but in order to do that requires, you know, a lot of work on the part of a company to do that. You know, they have to have a full-time set of people who are reading papers, who are keeping tabs on everything, who are highly expert in toxicology or in anything that Monsanto might come up, and then get to the press. You know, the whole idea is to get to the press before this paper goes online or something happens that you don't like if you're the company.
So the Monsanto's vice president of global regulatory affairs, Philip Miller, said in an interview, "We question the quality of the assessment. Mm-hmm. The WHO has something to explain when talking about how the WHO reported that Monsanto's most widely sold herbicide is inextricably linked to the majority of their genetically engineered products and is probably carcinogenic to human beings." So they're even threatening the World Health Organization.
Yeah, they consider that's within their remit, right? So they're attempting in one way or another to discredit any research that comes out. I mean, it's hard to discredit a panel of experts assembled by the United Nations, because these people come from all over the world. They're experts, and, you know, they're pretty decent experts. And so Monsanto's having kind of a hard time about this, but they expect to be able to do it. You know, they will probably go to the World Health Organization and demand a retrial or something. And there's a fair chance, you know, by hook or by crook, that they'll get something out of it.
Wow.
And if they don't, at least they're throwing sand in the air and they're not saying, you know, yes, you're right, it's a carcinogen.
They'll never say that.
No, they won't.
Good Lord. And also the rapid increase in the use of can you pronounce this word for me?
Yeah, neonicotinoid pesticides.
Neonicotinoid pesticides. Yes. So there's been a huge increase in that. Is that accurate?
Massive, yeah.
And does that have to do with Monsanto's lobbying?
Well, they sell it.
Yeah.
So it has to do with them. Yeah, it does. It's on their seeds, right? So they I don't think they actually make neonicotinoids, but what they do is they put it on the seeds. And the article that we have on the website is about how the seed coating. So basically, it's a pesticide that gets into the plant from the seed. So it's in the plant right from the get-go, but unfortunately, it rubs off, or it washes off, or stuff happens, or the seeds fly out into the areas surrounding fields, and then when the pesticide is in those places, then it poisons animals that take nectar from the plants, or caterpillars that grow on the plants, or bugs that eat the plants, and so basically all these bugs are disappearing.
The bees, and
bees,
also
bugs,
now the monarch butterflies.
You name it, it's all disappearing.
Just the things that our whole civilization basically depends upon for the pollination of plants.
Well, yeah, we do depend on that.
Yeah,
quite
so bad. That's pretty bad. But you sound very chipper. How do you say so, chipper?
I'm a natural optimist. But it's pretty tough. You know, you see people who are completely bamboozled by all this information that comes from the chemical companies. You know, the person across the street from me was spreading stuff on their lawn, you know, which is probably a mix of pesticides and fertilizers, and all of it completely unnecessary. It just means I'll have to go water their lawn later with public water or whatever. But but later in the year, because they put all these chemicals on the lawn, now it grows like crazy. They got to water it.
So, but Obama made a the original reason that I invited you on the show then led me to the website, which has all these amazing articles that could have, you know, be shows in themselves. Was an article entitled, What Happened to Obama's Promise to Restore Scientific Integrity? First of all, I was unaware that, I mean, I remember in the campaign rhetoric that he would say he would restore scientific integrity, but it certainly, I didn't see any action in that area. Could you talk about a little bit about what Obama has done to do this?
Yeah, sure. So he basically used it as a way in the campaign and his inauguration speech to put clear water between him and the Republicans, right? So he was the Mr. Integrity who would make science, you know, allow scientists to speak if they needed to about climate change or about pesticides or about the safety or otherwise of pharmaceuticals. And so so he made a big deal out of this. But unfortunately, after he's basically not followed up on that promise. So he's done various things. Like he wrote a memorandum to instruct his Office of Science and Technology Policy to write a policy. And then that policy basically said, well, the agencies can basically make it up for themselves. So the departments or the agencies of government can set their own policies, which, of course, the whole point of having this scientific integrity policy is because the agencies and departments of government weren't doing that because they're busy fixing the science, right, to show that Roundup is safe. So for example, so you've got a policy, you know, the president made a promise and then he's not following it up. So at EPA, he's now got a two-person office, which is supposed to guarantee the entire scientific integrity of a whole agency with 15,000 employees. And they can't do that. And they don't have the authority to do that. Mm. They don't have any rights to do anything except write reports. And so there is basically the president has failed at the implementation stage. Right? It's taken 6 years to get to the stage of hiring two people at EPA.
Well, one of the people was from the Union of Concerned Scientists, which made me feel good about that. But then when I continued reading, it seemed like that was just a publicity tactic aimed at people like me who would feel good knowing that someone from the Union of Concerned Scientists was at the helm there. Can you tell people about what happened there?
Well, there is a complicated war going on, right, where there are people who say they speak for good science and, you know, oppose Democrats or they oppose Republicans or they oppose multinational corporations, but they either don't know enough science to know how bad the situation is, or some of them are not really good science at all, or some of them are actually being paid by companies or paid by big foundations to basically pretend to be scientists or environmentalists. And it's in the case of the Union of Concerned Scientists, it's quite difficult to know what category they fit into. Mm. But this person who is the head of their scientific integrity policy has gone to EPA and basically failed to enforce scientific integrity so far as we can tell from these reports and what's happened so far. Because, you know, EPA is full of skeletons in those closets, right? The entire agency rattles with skeletons. So it would be nice if she could actually bring some of those out of the closet.
Do you think she might? One of the things that I read said that there's been 40 complaints filed and maybe all but 17 have been discarded because they were filed anonymously, but they were filed by people inside of the EPA. But then again, there's this this history of retribution against people who blow the whistle on things that aren't, following appropriate protocol or procedure. Do you see that she might actually be successful, or is she? Well, it seems like it's just a nice, like a PR front.
I mean, that's the people we asked basically said that it was a PR front. I think if she was going to do something, what you'd see is that she would basically collect all this information together and then put it out. You know, essentially, she'd have to become a whistleblower herself. I mean, this is what happened to the Department of Integrity, of the Interior, was that they fired their own equivalent of this Union of Concerned Scientists person who was Obama's appointee as their integrity person because he blew the whistle on on integrity issues. So they just fired him. And so you've got this absurd situation where you're just going round and round in circles, creating PR officers. And then if they either do their job, you keep them. And if they don't do their job, you fire them. and the jury is a little bit still out on this Union of Concerned Scientists person. But the omens aren't very good.
We're speaking to Jonathan Latham, PhD, co-founder and executive director of the Bioscience Research Project, which is the nonprofit publisher of Independent Science News, which you can find at independentsciencenews.org. Dr. Latham, can you stick with us through the break? I'd love to ask you a couple more things if you have a few more minutes, but we have to take a bottom of the hour break.
I'd love to.
We'll be right back on Science Day here at the Giuliana Forlano Show. Stay with us. Oh, we're back. That was quick. Just kidding. We got to give you a little break. And we picked out this song especially for you since it is Science Day here at the Giuliana Forlano Show. But poor Charles is sweating it trying to get the song out appropriately. And anyway, we are going to be taking your calls when we come back from break. So I'll give you that number. It's the same number we always have, 718-951-4444. Again, 718-951-4444. And here's the break. Good old Thomas Dolby with She Blinded Me with Science. There's just not enough science-related music out there that I have been able to find. Joining us on the program today, Jonathan Latham, co-founder, executive director of the Bioscience Research Project, the nonprofit publisher of Independent Science News. Dr. Latham, you can call and ask Dr. Latham questions if you like on our listener line, 718-951-4444, 718-951-4444. Dr. Latham, do you see any potential hope on the horizon for what Obama said in terms of, you know, he seems to be saying, listen, we have to deal with climate change, but it certainly doesn't seem like, you know, the current state of affairs, including all the money and corporate influence in politics, as we've seen with these Monsanto things, is going to allow that.
No, I don't see any hope from the president, and I don't see any hope from this Congress. But I think what is interesting is that solving climate change doesn't really cost much money, maybe no money.
How do we do it?
And basically focus on agriculture, right? So the soil is full of carbon, and it could have a lot more carbon in it. And so we can use the soil to suck that carbon out of the atmosphere if we chose to, right? If we didn't do industrial agriculture and we switched to organic food and sustainable methods of agriculture, they would start to pull carbon out of the atmosphere very quickly. And so not only would you have organic food to eat, you'd also have climate change would be way less of a problem. But also, if you started using organic agriculture, one of the main sources of carbon dioxide would also be removed from the atmosphere. And so you have a lot of people fussing about windmills and solar power and, you know, how do we reduce carbon coming out of smokestacks? But actually, the solution probably is to do much better agriculture and stop cutting down the rainforest. But that's another, that is also a symptom of agriculture, right? So the rainforest has been cut down for palm plantations that we don't need and for soybean fields that we don't need. And so there is
Don't most of the soybeans go to feeding cattle anyway, which is another agriculture?
Yeah, they do. They do. And it's all based on subsidies, right? So basically, agriculture is being switched to the tropics because you can get three crops a year in the tropics, whereas in Iowa or in New York State where I live, that you can only get one crop a year. And so basically agriculture is moving to the tropics because of subsidies and because of trade issues and because big companies can make more money out of it. And so in order to do that, they have to cut down the rainforest and these fantastic ecosystems.
And you think buying local produce is something that consumers can do to...
Yeah, totally it is. Yeah, if you buy local organic produce, you do the most tremendous service to the climate. Yeah.
We have a caller on the line. Jerry from Long Island has joined us. Jerry, thanks for calling in.
Yes, thank you. And yeah, I have more of a comment for your guest, and I'd like to know his thoughts on this, because to me, Obama failing to keep his promise, for instance, on restoring scientific integrity, that to me has to do more with the fact that Obama, like so many other Democrats, has turned into a pretty conservative corporate Democrat who does what's ever good for corporate special interests, which is why he's pushed so strongly to get these new TPP trade deals done and other trade deals done and a complete sellout. And so I think we need to recognize this and to push back more against the Democrats when they go in this direction where they just do what's ever good for the corporate special interests, and instead, we've got to make them either vote the right way or vote them out of office. Too late.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Jonathan, would you like to respond?
Well, I'm no fan of these trade deals, and I think it's likely that they will worsen things like climate change, for example. I mean, I would question your caller's assertion that Obama changed his mind in any way. You know, he still says the same thing and then does the opposite.
That's interesting. So you think he was basically just snowing us from the get-go?
I do, yeah.
I'm glad that Jerry called and brought up the trade deal, because Fast Track has been introduced to Congress. Remember, we've been talking about it, and we've been talking and talking. We're one of the few the alt press is talking about it, but we're one of the few press outlets that is talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and Fast Track is a way to squeeze the Trans-Pacific Partnership through our legislature without even giving them an opportunity to look at it, to see what's in the bill, which basically takes our voices as human beings, as people, as voters, right off the table. So that it has been introduced in Congress. So it's time to make that call. You have to call the U.S. Capitol switchboard. I'm going to give you the number. So pick up your pen. Don't just listen to the Giuliano Ferlano show. Do it. 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And just ask the operator to connect you to your representative's office. You don't even have to know who the representative is. You can just give your zip code and the person at that office will connect you, and you want to say that you're watching and you oppose Fast Track, and you hope that they will oppose Fast Track so that all our elected representatives can at least discuss in public what is in this very secretive trade deal. Again, it's the U.S. Capitol switchboard at 202-224-3121. We have another caller on the line, David from New Jersey. Thanks for calling. Are you there?
Yes.
Yes, your question.
On Percy Schmeiser's first site a few years ago, 5 years ago, he said that the U.S. owned half a patent on BT corn and Monsanto owned the other half. Do you know anything about that?
Wait, I'm sorry. I want to ask you to repeat that question just one more time, because it was a little garbled. It sounds like you're on the turnpike in New Jersey.
On Percy Schmeiser's website 5 years ago,
yes,
he said that the U.S. owned half of the patent on the BT corn patent, along with Monsanto owning the other half. Is that true?
Jonathan, did you get that question?
Yeah, I don't actually know the specifics of that. I know that you know, the whole GMO, you're probably interested in GMO agriculture, seeing as you know who Percy Schmeiser is. So he, the whole purpose of GMO agriculture is to advance patents, right? Basically, if you can control agriculture by the seeds, then Monsanto can extract huge amounts of money from agriculture. And so, you know, these traits that are being introduced as part of GMOs, they're not so great for agriculture. Mm-hmm. You know, all they do is allow you to spray more, or they contain pesticides in them. But what they do is allow one particular company or one small group of companies to exert a huge amount of control over the food supply chain. And so who owns these patents is important in all this process, because that is the whole point of them, as far as the companies are concerned. Right, they can take a huge slice of the pie if they own the intellectual property, right?
Thanks.
And I have a little question also about something that's really interesting to me is fast track, or these TPP negotiations are being done in secret, right? You just asked me about climate change. Those negotiations were done in public, right? So the question is, why are some negotiations done in private and some done in public, right? You do negotiations in secret if you want them to succeed. And if you do them, you do negotiations in public because you want them to fail. And that is why the climate change negotiations were done in public. So it become a big shouting match and fail.
That is very sad. Thanks for the call, David. I appreciate it. Could you speak to Dr. Latham, this idea that is always put forward, they're starving people, so we have to do GMOs because people are starving and that's how we will feed them. That's always the argument you hear when you say, well, are they safe? They say, well, we can make a lot more corn and there's starving people. But I don't see us feeding the starving people with this overabundance of corn. So your thoughts?
That's a great question. I mean, this has been a huge PR ploy for the multinationals and lots of people inside the food system, from the farmers to the distributors to the seed makers to the pesticide manufacturers. They're all arguing that what they do is needed to feed the world, right? So they have an ethical incentive there's an ethical necessity for them to do that, right? And so they've promoted this idea that there's a global food shortage. But, you know, if you talk to farmers, they know individually that the price of corn is low, the price of soybeans is low, the price of wheat is low, because there are huge gluts inside the system. And countries have huge surpluses. They don't know what to do with them. The European Union has huge surpluses. India has huge surpluses. South America has huge surpluses. They all have huge surpluses. So it's basically a lie, right?
So but the why purpose are people of the still, lie is... Yes. Why are people the, still starving if there are huge surpluses? It's ridiculous.
It's because they're poor.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well,
they don't have the money to buy it. They're just poor. That's all they are. There's no shortage of food where
we
they live.
We are a horrendous species, are we not? I mean, what the heck? This is just like it's hard to look at when you really look at how far we've come in destroying our planet Earth and not caring for our brothers and sisters, etc.
But it's not our species as a, you know, this is also the genetic determinist argument, right? Is that when we destroy things, it's because we have bad genes and because we have bad personalities and whatever. But actually, what's destroying our planet is a very small number of corporations and a small number of people making a very large amount of money off of fooling the rest of us with ideas like genetic determinism and the food crisis.
That is a good point. An excellent point. Our number here, 718-951-4444, 718-951-4444. Are you going to be celebrating Earth Day?
I don't actually know when it is.
I think it's Wednesday. Shh. It's Wednesday, and so there's going to be a lot of good environmental talk, but I hope there's some good environmental action. Folks can let us know. You can tweet to us at Juliana Forlano with the hashtag Progressive Earth and let us know what you're doing for Earth Day. I think you should do private things like eat or buy your locally sourced organic produce. Does organic matter, by the way?
Oh, it is super important. I mean, it's super important that it's not taken over by big corporations, right, who basically will try to bully the USDA into changing the rules, and they are doing that at the moment. But if we can get it to work, and all these different agricultural systems that give a fair share to the people who work in their systems, that give you pesticide-free food, that don't put fertilizers that cause climate change, that don't do all these things, then that is the single most important thing that we can do. And if we had, if we could solve climate change through agriculture basically alone, there would be no need to regulate or do anything else differently.
So I've always had this dream that huge corporations would then start fighting it out. So like big agribusiness would then go against, you know, the oil industry because they each want to not change. And then maybe there would be some sort of positive outcome. Who knows? A War of the Worlds thing.
They would all shrivel. Because there will be no healthcare industry anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Because we'd all be eating healthy food all the time, right? And there wouldn't be all this junk food. Then if the organic standards were right, then the sixth of the economy that is based on healthcare would almost vanish.
This all comes down to people.
And the carbon emissions that go with the healthcare system would also vanish. And a large part of the oil industry would also vanish because huge amounts of it is used to make pesticides, to make tractor fuel, to transport. Food across the country to make fertilizer, for example.
So these
industries would shrink automatically.
Right. So you're saying all these industries would shrink, and of course that's what they all say. Well, these are job killers, and we can't protect the environment because we need the jobs. But can't people sort of imagine a world where not everyone is working 24 hours a day? I mean, what's the argument against this job killer? And then we're going to go over to our next caller.
The main argument against the job killing thing is that you know, the work that we need to do in our economy to make people happy, to make warmth, to build houses, whatever, just needs to be shared fairly. And the point of an economy is to make sure that happens. And that, at the moment, that's not happening. What's happening is the economy is being used to bully people into being frightened for their jobs, to accepting low-paid jobs, to do all these things that they don't want to do. And the whole backwardsness of economics is that it was originally envisaged as a way of, you know, we have all this money, how do we share it out, right? Then share the wealth and make sure that everybody gets what they need and whatever. That was the whole purpose of economics. And now it's become a way of enacting people's power over other people.
I had, we'll play it later, but I had a poet come and we did a pre-recording of his interview. And I was thinking, gee, wouldn't it be nice if people could consider poetry as something to do? I mean, a lot of people, you know, or art or creation or any of that other stuff. I mean, if we didn't have to depend, I don't know. I'm getting off into like thinking what ifs and being positive about a potential, you know, the other world that's possible that we keep seeing signs of. We have two other callers on the line. I want to get to them before we've actually come to almost the end of our show. So if we can answer these two other calls, that would be terrific. And we are talking to, if you just tuned in, Jonathan Latham, co-founder and executive director of the Bioscience Resource Project, then a nonprofit publisher of the Independent Science News that you can find at independentscience.org. George from Long Island. George, you had a question or comment.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment. I think Dr. Latham here is a very sound, reasoned person. I'd like to suggest, you know, if President Obama is not going to restore integrity to science, then perhaps we can do our part by maybe having him on maybe once every 2 weeks or something. Because certainly there's a lot here to go over, and it would be very constructive.
Yes, so you're talking about me. You're saying have Dr. Latham on. Well, I would be thrilled. It would be a joy.
Yes, and I tell you this as, you know, my background, I'm a nuclear medicine technologist. And, you know, what he says, from what I have seen, is exactly the truth. Exactly.
Thank you so much for calling, George, and thanks for listening. And if Jonathan Latham will come back often, it would be my pleasure to have him here.
Great, thank you.
The people love you, Jonathan. Or Dr. Latham. Let's go to Doug in New Jersey.
Hello, Juliana.
Hi, Doug.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, my wife and I love your show.
Oh, thank you. We listen
as much as we can.
Hi, wife.
She's listening on the radio in the other room.
Okay.
So, anyhow, I have a question for your guest.
Yes.
I heard Ben Davidson on Guns and Butter a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about how the planet is actually cooling due to sunspot activity. And it what he was saying sounded very credible. I was wondering what your guest has to say about that.
Dr. Latham, sunspots, credible or not?
I am tempted to go with the scientific majority on this one, and I'm not a climatologist, so don't accept my word for it. But I think things are getting warmer.
Do you know who Ben Davidson is?
I do not, I'm afraid.
You do not? Okay. All right. Thank you.
I have heard that the majority of science thinks that the sunspot argument is not valid.
Yes, that's my understanding too. I think there are ways. There are some interesting things to ask about climate change, like the local models that people use, and there are some flaws in the way people are doing it. And there's also some, there's political pressure on the climate change groups, the IPCC, who come up with the recommendations and the predictions and such. So they're under a lot of pressure, and. You know, what's very interesting about the IPCC, this group that, makes predictions and the global governments have put together to try to understand what's happening to our climate, is that they had to assemble a huge group of scientists to check each other's work in order to resist the pressure of multinational corporations like Exxon and BP and all these people to try to get actually the truth from these scientists. Because if you spread scientists apart, the industry will get to them each and individually, and they will lie to you as a government or as a people if the companies can get to them. But that's essentially what's happened in the world of pesticides and the world of GMOs and many other parts of the scientific establishment, is the industry has got to these groups individually. And essentially, they're lying.
Thank you so much for your call. We have one more call on the line that I'd love to take. Sorry that you didn't get a chance for a follow-up question, but I want to get everyone in, and we have about 2 minutes left in the show. So, Rose from New Jersey.
Hi.
Hi.
Great show. Quick question. As a Dr. Lewis, a nephrologist, has said that 10 times as much is used in lawn care, is there anything like boric acid or Epsom salts or something that we can pour on the grass to kind of leach this stuff out? And remember, call your senators this week. It's already gone through the House.
Yeah, it's already gone through the House. You have to call your senators.
Senators.
You can call that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good point.
Right,
you can call
bye.
That. You're a good woman. Thanks, Rose. You can call that switchboard. 202-224-3121 is the number to make the call against Fast Track. Scary stuff. The question, Dr. Latham, is there anything you can put on your own lawn to kind of leach out, something that may have been put on by some neighbor who doesn't care about your health?
I mean, the answer is I don't know of anything specifically that will get rid of pesticides that have been put on your lawn. The best solution is not to put them there in the first place. And, you know, a lot of them take a long time to biodegrade.
Yeah.
The neonicotinoids that I was talking about earlier, they're not degrading over a year or 2 years. And so they're affecting wildlife, massively because of that fact. And I'm not aware of any way of getting rid of those. Sunlight will do it in part.
Mm.
But it takes, once it gets under the soil, once it's in water, if pesticides are in your house, for example, there's no sunlight in there. And so they will stay there. They can stay there for 50 or 100 years.
Well, that is horrendous news to end on. Do you have any final thoughts to... we're almost out of time, and I do thank you for coming on. But your final thoughts, Dr. Latham.
Well, the reason we started a news website is to educate people about these issues.
It's a great
I'm
website.
I'm grateful for you for having us on. And if you can encourage your friends to come and visit or send their articles to scientists, you'll find them credible and also important and also true.
This has been so great. We're speaking, if you missed it, Jonathan Latham, PhD, co-founder, executive director of the Bioscience Resource Project, which we didn't really get to talk much about. We've been talking about the fact that project is the nonprofit publisher of Independent Science News. IndependentScienceNews.org is where you can find that. And I'll tell you, really credible, really wonderful and articles on that. And you're linking to other, other credible sources also there. And it's nice to have a space where you can go, like the one-stop shopping for Independent Science News. Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Latham.
I've had fun. Thank you.
This has been great. And I hope you will join us again. Wasn't that fun? We had a great time. You've been listening to The Juliana Forlano Show. I'm Juliana Forlano. You can find our archives, not just our archives, but find the vibrant shows we've been doing at progressivevoices.com/Juliana Forlano Show. You can get all of our shows there. It's fabulous. You can support us. That'd be good. Go to our website. Click around. See what you can do. JulianaForlano.com. Follow me on Twitter at Juliana Forlano. And don't forget to go call your senators. Call that switchboard. And tell them that you are not interested in having Fast Track go through. You do not want the TPP going through. 202-224-3121. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow.
Come join us, Alan Seinfeld and myself, the mob, as we co-host the 9th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration. Thursday, April 23rd, from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. A conscious community gathering with 7 world leaders having a panel discussion. There will be indigenous ceremonies, live performances, and community participation. That's Thursday, April 23rd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church, 81 Christopher Street near 7th Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. with a 6:30 pre-show. For tickets and info, go to www.planetheart.org. That's www.planetheart.org. Or email info@planetheart.org. Come on down.
Building bridges your community and labor report. From your workplace to your neighborhood, listen to the show that brings it all together. Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Bringing you news and analysis, local, national, and international. Monday nights, 7 p.m. We build bridges.
And it's time we started calling the shots.
Come on, neighbors, let's get wise.
So, the plaster is falling, the paint is peeling, the plumbing is leaking, the heat and hot water keep cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls, but the rent keeps going up and up and up?
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m.
Reactionary landlord.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
Here on listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, the name of the show, Night Shift, Monday nights, midnight.
Midnight.
Midnight. Here on WBAI.
Hey, Harry, old buddy, old pal.
So I want you to be my buddy.
Friends or buddies, as we like to refer to you as here at WBAI. Either way, we invite you to join us and become a member of this fine radio station. We want to partner with you, but we want to do it in the least imposing and most painless way possible. Here's the deal. It's called the Buddy Pledge. You give us your support for 12 months, and we give you access to the most eclectic music, as well as the best and thought-provoking news, talk, and community affairs. Sound good? Get in your heart to pledge a minimum of $10 per month. Each payment will automatically be deducted from your credit or bank statement, so there's no reminders needed. Just join us for a one-year membership and go online at www.give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org, and be part of our vibrant community. WBAI New York.
And the previous program was the Juliana Forlano Show, heard Monday through Thursday at 6 p.m. here on WBAI. Stay tuned for Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. clock slowly creeps up to 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Building Bridges.